ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
It's an election year, and Georgia is spending big time. Welcome to Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm Greg Bluestein, part of the Political Insider team here at the AJC. Today, we are joined by James Salzer, who is our expert on the one thing the Constitution tells legislators they have to do every year, and that's write the budget. And this year, it's a big one, a record $30.2 billion. James, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm about to blow up your ego, so bear with me. But there's a saying at the Capitol that Salzer knows the state budget better even than the budget writers do. That's because he's been covering fiscal issues for the AJC and other papers since the dome got its gold top. And I dare say this must be the first time you've seen this much money being splashed around.
Well, first of all, that's not true, but... but
which part?
The part about knowing more than the budget writers. I hope I don't. For the state, I hope I don't. But yeah, I know, I'm joking. But yeah, it's a $3 billion increase. So it's like 11% in 1 year. And that's just unheard of. I mean, there's governors that have gone through their entire 4-year term and have increased 11%, you know, combined over that period of time. So unprecedented is not even the right word, because when I saw it, I was like, wow. But on the other hand, for Governor Kemp, you couldn't wish to run for reelection with a better fiscal situation, having all that money to spend, because, you know, it didn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat, if you're running for reelection, you don't want to be the one cutting spending or not giving pay raises or telling school teachers are going to be furloughed or, you know, any of that stuff.
Yeah. Let's get into the Kemp dynamic in a second, but just for context purposes, I mean, you spent a big chunk of your career writing about budget, but doing austerity, budget cuts, or more modest increases, 2%, 3%, you know, that barely keeps up with the growth of the state. So usually you're writing tougher, you know, stories about tough decisions involving budget cuts or priorities being shelved or programs being delayed or positions being unfilled. And this is a very different dynamic.
Yeah. I mean, in a typical budget year, the state, normal growth rate, this is not a recession year, but a regular year, it's about a $1 billion increase in revenues, what they take in. So this is spending three times the amount of money in an average year that the state takes in. And in election year, generally, I mean, there are exceptions. Maybe the Great Recession period was you know, example of that. But there are exceptions. But generally, when a governor runs for re-election, teachers are pretty much guaranteed they're going to get a pay raise, because that's always kind of at the top of the food chain politically. That you know, every governor wants to say, "I support education." There's over 200,000 teachers / school personnel around the state, so. Generally, that pay raise is that you generally something, you know, they're going to get something. The rest of it is all usually at most kind of keeping up with costs. School enrollment grows. There's a formula to pay for that. So they pay for that. Medicaid never goes down, it seems like. There's always more people on needing, you know, health care. And the last time health care costs went down, probably the United States was not a country. It always goes up. So those are the kind of things that you kind of expect that they're going to pay for. But this is just, like I said, this is beyond unprecedented.
Yeah. I mean, and as you mentioned, perfect timing for a governor facing reelection. I mean, I remember in 2019, in early 2020, before the pandemic, the stories that you and I were writing were about priorities. Will there be enough money for both the tax cut that Speaker Ralston really wants, or the teacher pay raise that Governor Kemp really wants. Now, not only is there enough money for both, but he also can fund all sorts of other priorities, including $5,000 pay increases for every public employee.
Right, right. And before the pandemic hit, they weren't going to do both those. They didn't have the money to do both those. In fact, the governor had, without knowing the pandemic was on the way, obviously, had already recommended spending cuts to state agencies. So, and then, you know, fast forward a couple of months, they come back for a special session, they cut 10% of the budget. They cut, you know, education almost $1 billion, for instance, just K-12 education. And now you're right, they have exceeded that. And the $5,000 pay raise for state employees, if you listen to kind of the agencies talk about this, the $5,000 pay raise is probably as important as just about anything that they're going to be doing in this budget session, because there are state agencies that have almost 100% turnover rate because they're paying people in jobs that are very difficult to do. And they have been increasing little by little. They have been increasing pay for some of these people. But 5 years ago, they had people, maybe even less than 5 years ago, had people guarding inmates, you know, a job that the average person, many of the average people that we write for wouldn't want to do this job. And they were getting paid $25,000 a year. Throughout state government, there are jobs like that, that are tough jobs, difficult jobs, and the pay has just been historically bad. And it just hasn't kept up. The old story on this is that, well, state government and government in general pays less, and you, before 2008 at least, state employees got a pension. Well, they got rid of the pension for state employees who were hired after 2008, so they don't even have a pension anymore. So they're getting $35,000 a year, you know, to do difficult jobs, and they don't even have a pension. So, And a lot of legislators talk to say the $5,000 isn't going to be enough. I mean, it's not going to solve the problem because, you know, if you were getting paid $25,000 or $27,000 a year and you get a $5,000 raise, you're still like right at $15 an hour to do some of these jobs, and again, some very, very difficult jobs.
Well, James, you know, the headlines of this are the big numbers, right? The $2,000 teacher pay raise, the $5,000 more for public employees, tax refunds of $250 to $500 for income taxpayers in Georgia. But there's also billions of dollars of other spending that will benefit colleges and new construction projects. And you've been reporting a lot on that too.
Right. I mean, it's interesting that whenever I write about state employees getting a raise, I get a bunch of emails from university system employees who say, does that include us? Because they're so used to feeling like the legislature doesn't, you know, all they care about is K-12 education and not, you know, caring about the university system. It's not true, but that's kind of, they kind of feel like the part of the system, the education system, that get this kind of the second wheel.
The forgotten few.
Yeah, forgotten. Yeah. So essentially, the agencies that took big cuts in the June 2020 pandemic legislative session, they took that 10% cut. A lot of them got their money back, essentially. There are also things that I cover this pretty extensively, I had no idea what was coming down the pike. And one of the ones is just, I almost didn't put in the story because I almost thought there was a misprint. Was $600 million for prisons. Now as you know, they haven't built a prison in a long time. I mean, it's probably been, you know, 10 years or so. They used to in the 90s and the early 2000s, they would build a couple of prisons a year. It seemed like they were either building prisons or they were contracting with private companies to take a bunch of the prisoners because the prison population was just, you know, was growing up. That, you know, changed under Governor Deal. So I think literally the first story that I posted on this, I didn't put that number in because I didn't have anybody I could check it with because it was, you know, I thought it was a typo. So they're using the money to build, I think it's either 3,000 or 3,500 bed facility and to buy a prison. I'm assuming from a private prison company. And in doing so, they say down the line they'll save some money because they're closing four older prisons that are considered like more dangerous and, you know, older facilities. But that is just something that it's unusual to do when you haven't spent money on prisons in a long time. So,
oh, this is a huge departure on criminal justice policy from
and then you've got, you know, and then we've got, you know, the, I forgot, was $80 or $90 million more for the Savannah Convention Center, which they've already borrowed like $180 million to refurbish that. So that's going to be a $250 or $60 million project. And they got a bunch of money. They put a bunch of money in for the your favorite project, the Rivian project. So yeah, someone was talking to me, interviewing me about this budget before it actually came out, and I said, you know, I'm starting to think this is going to be like Governor Kemp is on a Mardi Gras parade throwing out candy to people, because there's just so much, you know, available to people in this budget. So it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening.
A very long wish list with lots of items on it. And again, you know, a lot of priorities he couldn't, that a few years ago would have been a huge debate. Now he can afford to fund them all. This is Politically Georgia from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
Donald Trump has been indicted in Atlanta.
We have so many court dockets to follow, but we haven't really seen anything yet.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has covered every moment of this historic case.
I've been writing about this investigation for 2.5 years.
Our team is led by reporters Bill Rankin and Tamar Hallerman. Follow our coverage on AJC.com and listen to new in-depth episodes of the award-winning podcast, Breakdown, The Trump Indictment, only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.
We're back, and we want to remind you to subscribe to The Jolt, the daily political newsletter that helps set the agenda and the stakes in Georgia politics. In Wednesday's newsletter, we'll have the details on Governor Kemp's trip to Las Vegas and how it meshes with his push to expand gun access. We're back with James Salzer, the AJC's chief legislative correspondent and also budget guru, to talk about Governor Kemp's $30.2 billion spending plan. And specifically in this segment, we want to talk too about the pushback from Democrats. Chief among the criticisms is there hasn't been a push to expand Medicaid, that the governor could have used some of this surplus, some of this new funding, some of this economic largesse to fully expand Medicaid and once and for all cover hundreds of thousands of Georgians who still don't have healthcare coverage. James, you know, this is something we've heard for years. This was the basis of Jason Carter's campaign for governor. Stacey Abrams, you know, centered her campaign in 2018 around a call for expanded Medicaid. And 2022, once again, it's something that, you know, we thought there could be some appetite from Governor Kemp to do in a different political atmosphere, but not with Donald Trump breathing down his neck and David Perdue in the race. And of course, something that he still says is too expensive and too costly, and right, something yeah. The Democrats still say is right up their alley.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've all been covering this for years, and we know it's not about money. I mean, it's about politics. And they passed a law years ago. God, I can't even remember how long, probably 7 or 8 years ago, maybe longer, saying that essentially a legislature would have to approve. Mm-hmm.
That was in 2014.
But the math behind it doesn't. I mean, if you're making the money argument, you have to work hard to try to make the argument that it's going to cost too much, because the federal government is picking up almost the entire cost of it. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what the governor is spending on a lot of other stuff. The Republicans have always made the argument, well, you know, at some point the federal government might not continue funding it as much as it is now, which 4 or 5 years down the road, that could be true. But that doesn't mean you can't make changes in the program then. So we're talking about, I think, you know, the numbers we always hear is like $200 million. Well, mm-hmm. Again, there's been a $600 million on prisons. The follow-up argument would be, well, that's $200 million every year. You know, it's an annual cost, which is true. But again, none of these programs are written in stone that you can't make changes to them. if the federal government, you know, were to come back and say, we're not going to fund it. But I'm also skeptical the federal government would come back and say, we're not going to fund it because it's such a priority. And if they did say they weren't going to fund it, the more likely scenario would be that the Republicans have taken over and decided they don't want it anymore. Yeah. And so then your own party is the one who is making that decision.
And Senators Ossoff and Warnock have pushed legislative provisions through different federal bills that would call on the government to federal government to pay the full cost of expansion for at least a few years in states like Georgia and about a dozen other states that have.
It's mostly about that this is Obamacare. Yeah, I mean, it was promoted by Obamacare, and so it's a political fight as much as anything else.
Yeah. And again, you know, we've said this over and over again, but AJC polls have showed a broad majority of voters, regardless of party, support expanding Medicaid. It is a venomous topic among the conservative base and among independents and liberals and others, moderates. It's just not. Right. But it still is something we talk about. It's still a big part of the daily debate because we will be hearing about it.
And it's still not going to happen.
It's still not going to happen. But we'll hear a lot about it from Democrats saying, hey, you can spend $600 million on prison, but not on Medicaid expansion. Right. Another issue we'll hear from Democrats is that the governor is leveraging COVID relief money, the direct stimulus checks that both President Trump and President Biden both endorsed in order to fund his priorities, that he's relying on a program, you know, in the case of President Biden, that he didn't support in order to fund his budget.
Indirectly, that's true, because there were payments made to, you know, millions of Georgians. In addition, there's been the child tax credit, which expired, you know, the end of last year. There were bonus payments for the unemployed. So there's been a lot of federal aid that has in return bolstered the state tax revenues because people have had more money to spend. The state's chief economist said that Georgians had saved something in the neighborhood of, I think it was $85 million or $65 or $85 billion more during the pandemic than they had in the past because they had all this money going in. And it allowed low income and medium income Georgians to have some money in their checking account, have some money in their savings account to pay their bills, but also have a little bit on the side. And so, I don't think the governor would disagree with that. That federal aid has helped. I don't remember if he said anything when the initial aid went out under President Trump. I would assume he supported that. Almost no Republicans supported what happened when Biden took office and they passed another aid package, if I remember correctly. And the vote on that in March of 2021, there wasn't a single Republican who supported it. And in fact, if you remember, Governor Kemp and other Republicans here, their main statement on it was that the rules were going to be written so they couldn't use that money to cut taxes. Mm-hmm. Essentially the government was going to say, the federal government was going to say, if we give you this money, you can't cut state taxes. Well, they had already, I think it must have been the House had already passed a very small income tax cut and they were worried that wasn't going to be able to go through. Well,
federal government came back and said, it's impossible to track that. How do you say this money, is being used to cut taxes and that money is being used to.
And that's why the argument was kind of, you know, I was at the time going like, I don't think that's right. And it turned out I was correct. The Fed said, we never said you couldn't cut any taxes at all. You couldn't use state money. Because what ended up happening was the Georgia General Assembly had already passed, I think it was the House had already passed a small tax cut. You know, the governor didn't want the federal government to come in and say, you can't do that in the end.
Or he kind of did want, in case that was a big political fight.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. But he didn't, I mean, in terms of like getting the tax cut. And in the end, the federal government never had any intention, it sounded like, of preventing that. What they had an intention of doing is not of saying, you know, we're going to give you, say, $4 billion in aid to, you know, solve all these various problems. And then you turn around and go, okay, we're going to cut income taxes $4 billion. That's what they didn't want.
Yeah. Well, James, before we go, one last question. Readers, listeners, viewers can sometimes see numbers and it's a lot, right? Billions here, millions here. What's your pitch for why they should tune into this budget process, this $30.2 billion unprecedented budget process?
Well, you know, I put this in the stories a lot because state government pays for 2 million students to go to school or helps pay, you know, pays the salaries of probably 300,000 state employees and teachers and educators. And they just do, you know, they patrol the streets. They house inmates and, you know, felons when they commit crimes. They handle environmental regulation, state parks. I mean, there's I think 36 or so state agencies, and they all have missions that have constituents, essentially. I mean, everybody, public health care, besides the public health care that we know because of COVID, we know the public health director almost as well as Dr. Fauci, but more than 2 million Georgians get their health care through the state. Hundreds of thousands get mental health. And so there's just all these programs that getting more money or getting less money, there's an importance to it. And there's something that, and besides that, you and I pay for it. Everybody pays yep. for it. And so as a taxpayer, I sure want to know that they're spending our money wisely.
Amen, brother. Well, all right. Here's the podcast plan this week from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Congratulations, first off, to Sarah Spencer on the launch of the Hawks Report. She has a very candid interview with star power forward John Collins, who for now still remains on the Hawks. We'll see what happens. Atlanta United is starting their training camp, and Doug Roberson will have an update on Thursday on Southern Fried Soccer. James, maybe you can be a special guest for his show too. On the Bowtie Chronicles, Falcons beat reporter D. Orlando Ledbetter. D. Led is joined by AJC columnist Michael Cunningham to dig into what the Falcons need to do in free agency. Coming out Thursday on Access Atlanta, we look at how local restaurants are responding to Omicron. If that sounds like a bigger list than usual, that is because of our producer, Jay Black, who is spearheading a massive expansion of podcasts at the AJC. Huge. Thank you, as always, Jay, for producing the show.
Big, huge, huge.
Huge. And thanks again to James Salzer, our budget guru. And I think I gave you this title, Chief Legislative Correspondent. Does that work for you? Chief Capital Correspondent? Chief State House Correspondent?
Whatever you call me, it's an honor.
Well, I'll call you all three of those.
He can be that for the podcast, no doubt.
There he is. He's the Chief State House Correspondent for the Politically Georgia podcast. Thank you, James, for joining us. And please, again, rate, review, share, subscribe, follow Politically Georgia and all of our AJC podcasts. We so enjoy hearing your feedback. We've been getting a lot of emails and texts and messages from listeners. The other day, I spoke at a conference and several people came up to me and said, this is what they listen to as they work out, which is not exactly your typical workout music, but we'll take it. And thanks again. We will see you guys on Friday.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
Hip-hop is a product of Black people. It's a product of Black song. A celebration.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution presents
hip-hop's most pulled elements are pulled from the South.
A Southern hip-hop store.
We always go back to that moment of the Source Awards.
Everybody wants your rhythm, but they don't want your blues.
The biggest names in hip-hop.
Atlanta is still the mecca for hip-hop.
50 years.
No one can deny.
One film.
The power of the South now.
The South got something to say. Streaming now at AJC.com/hip-hop.